Celebrate America's 250th with Dish. For a limited time, get an extra $250 off when you sign up. Call 888-ADD-DISH or visit dish.com today and use code DISH250 to claim your $250 savings. That's 888-ADD-DISH. Offer ends August 12th. Terms apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Been waiting for this conversation. I'm excited about this to learn what is going on here. A blockchain security firm called CertiK tracks crypto-related kidnappings around the world. In its 2026 report, it put Nancy Guthrie's name on the official wrench attack list alongside other verified cases in France, the UK, and a Scottsdale home invasion that happened the day before Nancy Guthrie disappeared. Scottsdale, not all that far away from where Nancy Guthrie disappeared from. The firm counted 34 verified incidents globally in the first 4 months of the year, a 41% increase, with roughly $101 million in losses. A wrench attack, in case you're wondering what the heck we're talking about, means physical violence used to force access to cryptocurrency. Basically, buy that $10 wrench and you can get the money versus some big, intricate, multi-thousand, multi-million dollar system. Handlers overseas, disposable operatives recruited through encrypted apps and violent home entries. Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us. She's been one of the loudest expert voices connecting this model to Nancy's case. And I said before, checks a lot of boxes. But a standalone analysis of this, of the evidence, has raised problems the theory hasn't quite answered, starting with the fact that no crypto connection to this family has been publicly identified. This is where the theory meets its hardest question. Here to discuss on a Monday, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Welcome to a new week, everyone.
Hey, week.
So Nancy's case, what makes Nancy's case belong on this list when a lot of those evidence elements are not there? I guess the biggest question is, Jen, how did it even get on the list? Because this is not what the authorities have been saying whatsoever so far.
Well, you're right. And it's kind of interesting how I even came across this was just knowing that CertiK is really the number one go-to SME for the FBI. This is who they go to when they have a crypto case, and they have used them in other cases, including that Korean case, which is the big whammy of a case that spiders into different cases. They use CertiK's work for that. So, you know, very interesting. So my question is, Certica obviously has blockchain information that none of us have. Mm-hmm. You know, look at different trends, whose blockchains are intersecting with who. What do they know that we don't know that put them on the list? In other words, were they able to establish that Savannah Guthrie and her husband have crypto? It wouldn't surprise me at all that they have Bitcoin. They're worth $45 million. They should have been investing in it. So it makes a lot of sense. But now to see Certica say, yeah, ooh, to me, that was huge. And it's the biggest public notice we have.
Well, and that's a weird thing about it, is the fact that it was just kind of like silently released in this document through Certica. It's not from an official channel like the FBI or Pima County. I guess the first thing I saw or I thought of when you sent that to me the other night, I was like, did somebody accidentally publish something they shouldn't have published? Like, was this on a, like a draft of like, oh, well, we know this. Yes, but the public doesn't yet. So we can't put that out there in this sort of context. I mean, is there something like that going on here or what?
I don't think so. I think it's that Certica, like any other company, is not bound by those rules. And because the FBI isn't releasing anything in Pima County. Now, I do want to say what Pima County has said on this. Uh-huh. And it's interesting. They have said, we have not had any wrench cases. We have not been notified of any wrench cases. That's literally what they wrote. Uh-huh. I don't know. What does that mean? Uh-huh. You notified of a wrench case. How about, through our investigation, we don't believe Nancy is a wrench case, then who the hell is it? I mean, how can you say something is in a negative when you don't know the positive, unless they know the positive? In other words, who their suspects are.
Do you think this changes the what they're investigating, how they're investigating, the resources that they're bringing to bear on this, Jen? Because, I mean, I just looked it up. In 2023, there were 69,000 type scams that involve crypto in 300,000 in 2024. I mean, it's a huge number that involve crypto on type scams that we've been involved in as the FBI. But obviously, it's different resources. Do you think this is actually helping the investigation, having different resources and a different look at this?
Absolutely. And we've known from the beginning. I looked back at this again to double check. Pima County has said over and over again, listen, we're using other professionals, right? We're using private professionals. And we know from being in the FBI, that's what we always did. Our 13,000 agents, they don't have this sort of knowledge. None of them do. So right. You have to hire people in the private sector. Look how they got the video footage. They didn't get it because the FBI got it. They got it because the Google experts got it. And that's the same thing here. They should be looking, as we've said from day one, at that Bitcoin account. Who opened it? How was it opened? You and I go to open one, and all that information is going to be available. All of it. So what happened here?
Do you think there's – so, like, when do you think they really truly got involved? And you think the tempo of not knowing more now, or do you think they know more behind the scenes? In other words, has this been – like the main thrust or a main thrust from the very beginning, do you think? And we're just finding out about it, or are they brought in later on this?
Well, look, I know we're just sleuths now out here. And I've been looking at this for months, you know, saying, could this be a wrench? Could clear back in right. March. So my whole point is, as an FBI agent, heck yeah, we should have been looking at this, because to say this is not sophisticated unless they know they already have a target picked out, it doesn't make any sense not to look at this avenue.
So they're listing it as a wrench attack on their report that they put out there. What does that translate to in reality? What does that mean at the end of the day? If they're saying this is what it was, okay, how do they get to that conclusion? Like, what is that? What does that mean in the real world?
Well, Robin, you know how this is when you have all of this information that Certica has. In other words, all this blockchain information and related individuals who have opened up accounts and accounts that look squirrely and problematic. Plus, they're going to have the account that was listed on the ransom demands, right? They're going to have all of that. So they have this huge stew that they're able to look at that we're not able to really see. And to me, when I saw Certica come out with this, I thought, ooh, they have put together some blockchain information that we don't have that has led them to this conclusion.
Do you think one of the challenges they're having right now is why it's, again, it's we're always in a compressed time span because this actually could be moving just at the same tempo that they'd expect it to move to, but since we're so examining it from the outside in, it looks like it's moving slow. So do you think one of the challenges they're having is, all right, so they're looking at the blockchain, they're looking at the crypto, and there's someone who created it, someone is doing it, but do you think they might be having a hard time relating that aspect of it to the actual crime itself? Is that one of the disconnects that they're trying to bridge the gap between those two, or do you think they already have it?
You know, I think the biggest problem for them is connecting it to who.
Right.
Who's behind the whole thing? And that's the biggest problem with these wrench attacks. And we call it a wrench attack, but really what it is it's, I mean, it's a fancy word for ransom for crypto in this case. It's by proxy. In other words, they didn't go in there and beat Savannah for her key, right? Her key mm-hmm. to her crypto. They took Mama, hoping that this would work to get the $6 million in crypto. So to just not make it too, it sounds sexy or whatever, or confusing to say wrench. I know everybody's like confusing. Oh, that's not Occam's razor. Oh, it is Occam's razor, because it's saying exactly what they did. They went in there, they abducted her, and they asked for money. She died. They didn't get it. And now they're all hiding.
So one more follow-up to that before I keep stealing from Tony. Sorry.
You're fine.
So one of the things I looked up when I saw, you know, crypto and wrench attacks is that they typically will target people they know, like Tony said at the very beginning, that they know have crypto or can easily create crypto. And since it hasn't been part of anything we've seen publicly about Nancy having crypto or Savannah having crypto, it's just an assumption. Is there any way that someone who was going to perpetrate this could look up anywhere to see if they actually did have crypto? In other words, it wasn't just a wild guess that they did or could have it, that they actually were able to get some sort of evidence in some way that said, oh yeah, that they probably definitely have it, so we're going to do this.
That's such a great question, and that was always the one we were proposing, right? Well, now to me, with Certica putting this on their wrench report attack, this shows me that they have found that. That's at least the inference that I think one could make. Now, I did reach out to a Bitcoin expert that I've worked a lot with on this case. He said, because I asked him, could he do it? He said, no, he's not capable of doing that. But Certica, I reached out to him about the Certica, and they are capable.
So, I mean, essentially, is this telling us that they know a heck of a lot more of who's behind the abduction and likely murder of Nancy Guthrie? Are they connecting this to the ransom demand to someone who has Nancy? Because your other side to that coin is basically a ransom demand, and they have nothing to do with Nancy, but they're just trying to capitalize on the exposure of this. So they're basically doing a wrench. It's a wrench attack without a wrench attack. It's just a ransom demand is all it is for people who are desperately wanting their mother back. I guess I'm confused as to ransom demand, no real connection to Nancy, versus ransom demand, true connection to Nancy. The fact that they're publishing this makes it appear more so that they have connected the ransom demand truly to the people who have Nancy Guthrie. Am I interpreting that accurately?
That's how I take it, Tony. Yeah. And I think it answers a lot of questions on one front, but creates some confusion on another front. The questions it answers is, how has the FBI not been able to crack these six communications that came through? When I say six, three times the two letters, right? Three different locations.
Yeah.
How can they not crack this? And when you look at a sophisticated wrench type organization, you're not going to be able to crack it. It's going to be very, very difficult. It's also going to be almost impossible to hook them up with the moat that they hired. Just like the wrench attack we saw in Scottsdale, Red and Eight, you know, through a Signal app. It's going to take a long time to ferret through who Red and 8 are. And I'm sure it's, you know, backstopped behind all sorts of international emails, using public email addresses and using VPNs, all sorts of issues that are created. But that kind of indicates to me, it's an indicator that another indicator that this could be a more sophisticated people behind this. But I think the question that it begs, why would they do that? If Moak tells them she's dead, why in the world then do you send out things to these media sources? And I've been looking for other Wrench attacks by proxy that have been handled this way, that have gone to the media. And essentially, this is the rub, right? Are you doing it because you know this way you can communicate to them without getting caught, right? How else are you going to communicate with them at this point? You're not going to leave a letter. No one leaves a letter anymore except the gangbangers that do this. So are you going to email them? Are you going to text them? No, you're going to have to contact them publicly. That's how I see it. And I have seen in Wrench attacks a couple of things. One, a lot of times Wrench ransoms are paid without proof of life. Did you know that?
No.
They pay it. I had a couple of examples because they're terrified that their loved one is going to die. So they just go ahead and pay it. And at least in one example, they got the person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the thing is, they care about the money. And I could see them going after it to a point, right? In other words, hoping that they're going to get the $6 million. If it wasn't for the person, could it be for the body? And then they never got it. And then they're out like a ghost. Now, obviously, this is just one premise, but something they have to look at really closely.
This is kind of a broader picture question, but and maybe I don't know what the answer to this is. The fact that these lanes of communication, these lanes of transaction even exist. Obviously, there's always been back end, somewhat illegal ways of transferring money amongst people in untraceable ways. This seems to be kind of the latest incarnation of it in the way that our world is functioning. But the fact that these do exist, and a lot of these outlets and these paths to make transactions in a fairly untraceable way, if the FBI can't even crack this shit. Why do these lanes even exist? I mean, a lot of them are legal. Is there something, should there be a more of a crackdown on these sort of lanes even existing, or is it really, you're never going to stop this at this point? The channels exist, legal, illegal, they will always be there, and criminals will use them to further enrich themselves and control.
Well, they're going to always be there and they're always going to use them. Crypto is going nowhere. In fact, people believe it's the future for us. But nevertheless, no matter what you believe, they're going to be there. And that's exactly why you have a $2 billion company called Certigate.
Yeah.
To all of this down and to help law enforcement. They work hand in hand with the FBI, talked about one case, multiple cases with the FBI and with law enforcement throughout the world, to try to identify these types of transactions and issues, things they see in the blockchain when new nodes or whatever are created, wallets are created that lend themselves to looking problematic. That's what Certigate does. Mm-hmm. And so I find this all very interesting. It's just so outside the realm of law enforcement's normal, what they normally look at.
So it's interesting. I've been doing a lot of research as we've been talking, just kind of filling in some nooks and crannies. So, and we've been saying, exploring this idea from the beginning. So Wrench attacks are most common. 2 to 4 people is the most common number, which means that the greatest vulnerability, because I looked up that, which typically trips up a Wrench attack, is its operational security. Victim survives, identifies them, which we don't have here. But bad planning, crypto tracing, victim resistance, those are the most common things that trip these guys up. And so it's always human leakage that does that. And yet we don't have this in this case yet. And that's why it's interesting and challenging if it is the crypto one. And then also, and to your point also, I did look up how common is crypto without proof of life. And yeah, it's actually pain with weak to partial proof of life is very common in the crypto things too. So just looked it up on the fly for us. But so I'm still curious, how come we just haven't had more leakage in some way if other people were involved? Because like we've been saying, it's all these theories start fitting at the very beginning, but as we start going down the path and we get start narrowing in, they all completely is like, God, that doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. And you're like, it all, as close as you get, poof, it kind of evaporates. It's frustrating.
Well, when you look at this one, I don't see the poof it evaporates yet because of this. If, first of all, you're never going to get any leakage from the guys at the top. I mean, they're probably in another country ordering all of this around. They are on to their next victim as soon as this ended and maybe even at the same time. So they're moving on. You're not going to get them, probably. As far as the mope, the one that answered the ad, the one that wanted to be the Green Goblin for a night and stuff a gun that didn't fit a holster in front of his crotch. That guy, what if he's a loner? Seriously, what if he's a loner? I agree with you. I haven't seen one under two, but that doesn't mean they exist. And that doesn't mean that this is one where this guy said, listen, I'll do this on my own. I don't need any. Maybe the other say, I need some help. Remember the one up at Scottsdale, two people that didn't even know each other. Such idiots.
Yeah, I would think, though, because we were talking about this the other day. I agree. I mean, because Jim Clemente said he's looking like a loner. And if he is a loner, this does not look like a dude that knows how to do crypto. So I would think if it was crypto, it would have to be at least one other person, because typically it's one person in control, one person do the wrench or the, you know, the influencing to give it up. It's just what I meant by it falling apart towards the end is that typically, again, but this is a different case because of Nancy's condition when they depart the house, is that they maintain that pressure over time and contact with the family in order to get something. And that kind of just would kind of fizzled out, too.
Well, I mean, an interesting thought with if it is a mope and this guy really didn't have a whole lot of contact or relationship with the higher ups that are telling him, here's what you're going to go do. It could be somewhat conceivable, I would think, that, okay, he goes in, this goes horribly wrong. He decides, and it becomes basically a B&E gone bad, ends up, you know, taking her body out, disposing of it. He can't go back to them and be like, hey, she's dead. Maybe he just goes off the radar too, to even the higher ups that are trying to execute this wrench attack. And the last thing he's going to do is like, oh, I was answering an ad and doing this job and it went horribly wrong. And they have no interest in being like, oh yeah, the mope we hired, he fucked that up. It seems like a lot of people have a pretty vested interest in saying nothing and getting off the radar pretty quick. Right. And to the folks that may be trying to execute the wrench attack from higher up, this is probably just one of many that they're throwing the fishing lines out there to see what mopes they're going to get to run it out. And this one ended the way it did. If he doesn't want to be caught, and it's only him who knew about it, on the local level, because the controllers are some faraway land, that, I mean, it kind of plays the two theories together in a sort of a way.
Good.
That's exactly what I meant. Is not that this is a one person deal at all. I just meant a one mope.
Mm-hmm. One local, right? Yeah. One executor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just mean one executor.
Like an independent contractor for the the wrench folks.
Only one Green Goblin, everyone.
Yeah,
so one. If he's a loner and that's the situation, that could explain, as you mentioned, why isn't there more leakage down below? And I think that would be a plausible answer. There was something else you said, Tony. Oh, I can't remember now, as far as the concern. Oh, I know. It was that they're not relentlessly going after the money. Uh-huh. Or are they? What really drives me crazy is that we say, or they say, somebody says, that the other notes aren't connected. The FBI has not said that, but mm-hmm. Savannah said the first ones are and the last ones, aren't. Or she doesn't say they're not. She just says the others are. How does anybody know that? If you don't have the addresses, the IPs, if you don't know who sent any of them, and I'm not talking about the ones to individuals, I'm talking about the ones to the media. Same mm-hmm. MO, both asking for crypto. How do you know they're not related to one another?
Well, and I think the answer is nobody knows. And I think a lot of some of the statements that Savannah has read or made, not necessarily scripted statements, but just like her own visceral reactions to things. So many people, I feel like, have taken her words as if they were coming straight from law enforcement. That well, she says she believes they're connected. Well, that's what she believes. And she's totally entitled to believe whatever she would like. It's her mother. But it doesn't mean it's fact. It doesn't mean that that's truly where the investigation is at. It's where what her gut is saying. And I think there's been a lot of that with this case where there's so much gray and every kind of picks and chooses what they think is green and not gray. And some of it, and you pick and choose and you move some of them this way, well, then your output is this. When you pick and choose some of them that way, then your output is that. And it all depends what you want to believe and who you want to believe it from and what feeling is fact. And that's why this case is so damn confusing.
And a good point on that, Tony, you know, and Jen, when, again, it's not taking away anything from Savannah or anyone in her family commenting on these notes,
no.
But how many ransom notes have they personally read in their entire lives?
Yeah, I mean, where are they coming from?
There's no reps in it. You know, they don't have a background of thousands of cases of having done this. You know, they have an impression, they have thoughts, they have feelings, they have emotions, because typically our default thinking mode for a human being is an emotional thinking brain, not a pragmatic, objective thinking brain. Yeah. So that's where those things come from. No fault.
Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on the Bitcoin, on the wrench attack. What do you think? Is this something? Is this the path to which we will find answers? The links are in the description, Substack and YouTube, for you to weigh in. We'll continue our conversation there. On to another end of this conversation. An anonymous caller reached a volunteer search collective in Mexico on June 10th and claimed Nancy Guthrie's remains were buried in the Mariposa area near a stream by the border. The group, I'm probably going to say it wrong. I know you say it lovely every time, Jen. Why don't you just say it for me so I don't do it?
Oh, well, I have to read it.
Buscando Corazones, Nogales? I think that's correct.
Buscandos Corazones.
Oh, see, look, it's
much
rolled
better
off your tongue.
Much more beautifully said than I had. They went out and they searched the site. They found nothing connecting to Nancy. What they found months earlier during broader searches from April to May, allegedly they found more than 25 unmarked graves containing the remains of at least 32 people in the same area. The sheriff's department says it learned about the search from media reports. Mexican authorities haven't contacted them, according to authorities in the U.S. 4 months in, the search for Nancy crossed an international border, and the people running her case apparently found out from the news. The phrase I keep hearing a lot of is we haven't been contacted by Mexican authorities. Mexican authorities have not confirmed this or that. Considering the track record of Mexican authorities and the country in general, how much are we putting too much weight on what Mexican authorities are going to be contacting anybody on in terms of law enforcement or solving a crime of this nature, considering the utter chaos that's going on with cartels and such?
No, I mean, you bring up a great point, such a valid point. Look, the Mexican authorities, the federales, are in cahoots with the cartels.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. So they are really a criminal organization and enterprise in and amongst themselves. Now, that's not to say that in cases that don't involve the cartel or cases where they can be of assistance, that they won't be. In this case, you know, I don't know, but you have to go check those graves. You have to check every leaf. I think it's a bit of a shot in the dark, but it's possible she could have been delivered there. I think a lot of us have talked about that's a 50-50 proposition. It's most likely that she's in and around the Tucson area, everyone. Most likely. They're not going to take her that far, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, Jen, so tell me your thoughts on this, because this is what I posed on our show on Friday when Tony shared that, hey, they found like 27 graves and 32 bodies. Was, from my perspective, if you just reverse it, if you're looking for some attention that a family member's have lost family members, like your son's gone, your daughter's gone, they went missing, you know the cartel's involved, and you know the federales aren't going to do anything, what better way to get attention to trying to find your loved ones or bring attention to this than say Nancy Guthrie's buried here? So my conjecture on this one is that there's possibly, this is some poor loved one trying to use the Nancy Guthrie case to help bring attention to the fact you have a dumping ground of bodies that the cartels have here. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great, great point. I think it could be possible with why the anonymous person came forward. But at the end of the day, what are they exactly going to do? Are they going to do, you know, IgG on all of these people? Are they going to take, who's going to pay the money to even do DNA analysis at the lowest level? Who's going to do that?
Well, and to that point, and you said it so great, you have to follow every single lead you get. My thought process is they know that the FBI, because I mean, shows like us say it, you know, when you have people like us on, it's like you follow every single lead down. And so if they're looking for some positive ID of a family member, if you think some law enforcement from the U.S. is going to come in and try to do DNA evidence to try to identify, because, I mean, so you do your empathetic, you know, thought process here. If you're a family member, you're trying to draw attention to this, you have a much better than a zero probability. You at least have a probability that if you can get in the public eye in the United States and even get Savannah's family involved to fund any sense of attempt to try to find family members that are maybe in this pit or however they're placed there, you have a higher probability and chance of that happening than if you did nothing at all.
Well, I think at least they could discern women versus children versus obviously, yeah. There's some things that you could easily discern. But boy, that further testing.
Or even just articles. So if you think, you know, I mean, so you have articles of clothing, you have moment. I mean, who knows, right? But you don't know until you as a family member, you give it a shot. I mean, just think about what you would do as, you know, what each of us would do as a parent. It's like, if you knew there might be something to this, man, you're gonna do all you can.
I want to throw this out there because I mean it's a point you made right away, Jen. That if Nancy is gone, she's likely buried in or around the Tucson area.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, and the reasoning for that is really quite simple. The longer you're traveling somewhere with a body, the more chances you have of somebody finding you traveling somewhere with a body. So you're best off to dispose of it at a relatively local area, so you don't have to be traveling with that body. If you're going to go across the border, you have a couple options. You can go through the legal route and hope nobody searches your vehicle. I mean, or there's obviously back-end routes that people can take with a body, which is not necessarily, you know, as advantageous as if you're just doing it yourself. What would the incentive be to take Nancy's body to Mexico to bury it if she died in the house or died shortly after the house? I don't really see why anyone would take that risk, killer or not, or whatever it may be. That just totally opens up your window for being caught. I mean, I get the idea of, well, there's less likelihood that she's going to be identified or found there, but you are increasing your odds of being identified and found getting the body there.
Well, you're exactly right. And if you look at this, first of all, I do want to say I 100% believe she was alive on that porch because we see expirated blood.
Yeah.
And that, so I do believe 100% she was alive. For how long? I don't think it was probably very long because I think they blindfolded her and put her in that trunk and she's just so frail. Mm-hmm. Secondarily to that, though, to your point about this whole Mexican cross, now you're going to be in the car with her for about an hour and a half, something like that. It is in the middle of the night, so it's possible that you'll never really be seen. But what about traffic cameras? What about that cop that happens to see you and pull you over for whatever reason? I totally agree with you. And remember, very early on, and I have this communique, if you don't, Tony, it's the one that Mexican authorities, the federales, again, but they said they were never contacted from the FBI on this case. This was in February, right after this mm-hmm. happened. So they're saying, listen, they didn't call us. My point to this is, why? Why is the signal sniffer looking within 2 miles of Nancy's house? why is one person they arrested within or detained within 2 miles of Nancy's house? Why is the other one within, you know, I don't know what, whatever it was, 30 minutes, 40 minutes of Nancy's house? They are looking, if we look at the actions of law enforcement, they are looking right in around that area. And they know so much more than we know, but that tells us what they know.
Yeah, when you said the FBI never contacted federales too, because the next thing that popped in my mind is, how could the LEGAT not at least talk to liaison? So the FBI's got LEGATs all over the world, and we have a LEGAT in Mexico City. It's hard to imagine. You don't need direction. I mean, one of the reasons why you're a LEGAT, you're an FBI agent representing our law enforcement interests in a foreign country, is because you have the ability to take initiative, you have great relationship skills. It'd be hard pressed to think the LEGAT, without even any direction, wouldn't reach out to the local and say, hey, can you check on this? And so that's, the whole thing's just weird. Why wouldn't the LEGAT reach out just on their own automatically? I would.
I agree. At least with the bolo. At least
yeah,
with the
yeah.
picture. But again, they're not even putting the picture, I know I'm preaching, a porch guy in Spanish on any, you know, signs. It's mind-boggling to me. Unless they know who this is, why aren't you doing that? Why isn't that all over Mexico?
I guess that's the question, is if do they know who this is, and they're trying to prevent them from going further underground, and this strategy is to play stupid. We haven't been in communication. We're not going to plaster your face everywhere because we don't want you to go further underground. Although you're kind of rolling the dice there. The more people see it, the more likely they're going to be identified if they're out there in the ether. I mean, it's a bit of a gamble there, but that's the only thing that seems to make some semblance of sense as for the procedures that have taken place in this and where they've landed or have not landed. Or it could be the simple answer is incompetence.
Robin, you and I right now, we're in the squad room. And you and I have this as case agents on this case. Is there any part of you that if you have no idea who Porch Guy is there any semblance when I say, Robin, let's change all the billboards over. It's not going to cost anything to have Porch Guy's mug and also listed in Spanish what happened. What are you going to say to me as my co-case agent? Jen, you're stupid. Don't do that. Or, yeah, maybe we should do that.
I got a big fuck yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what you do. You know, so when you exhaust everything and it costs nothing to do more, because it always, you know, inside organizations. So here's how the sausage is made again. I love talking about this with you, Jen, you know, and for the audience is like, here's what goes on behind the scenes. What resources at your disposal, personnel and financial, that you can actually do more towards cases? And if you are telling me that we have the resources to do more, why wouldn't you do more? Because if this is exhausted, in other words, you thought you had a full sponge and you've wrung it completely dry and there's nothing there, go over here. Why wouldn't you? Because it costs you no bandwidth, zero. So then it comes down to this. For some reason, because what's the motivation of all human beings? They don't do anything that inspires them to feel unsafe or insecure with their futures or their careers or something. For some reason, someone doesn't feel safe in doing more, which is really boggling in this one.
Or the only other reason is if I look at you and propose that, you say, but Jen, we already know who it is.
That's the other, that could be it too.
That's the only reason you don't do that. How about this? How about searches stopped the day after?
Yeah, that was now, weird too.
Pima County's choice, despite all these people coming in, all these people saying they can help. I mean, you know, we've talked about the Cajun Navy, Madres Buscadoras.
Or you just have what we saw from the beginning, extreme incompetence and narcissistic of Pima County that says
survey
we got
says?
This. Yeah. Because you're right. Because it's literally. So we'll go to one of Jen's great Occam razors here. It's as simple as that explanation. Either they know who it is, or they're really fucking stupid.
That's literally, that is what we are left at. They know who it is, so they don't need to search. They don't need to have any billboards. They don't care about what certificate says because they are convinced that X is responsible. So then, riddle me this. Why, when early in the case, they had not probable cause. Well, they had probable cause to do searches and to seize cars, but not probable cause to detain somebody. They had reasonable suspicion to do a detainment. Riddle me this. They came in like a SWAT. It was reported that HRT was there.
I mean, they were.
Descended.
I think I believe there's a mix of everything going on.
Yeah, because I know people that were there part of HRT, and they were rerouted there because Kash Patel wanted a presence there too. So I mean, there's so many machinations going on behind the scenes, from image that you're trying to maintain, attention you're trying to do, notoriety. I mean, there's so many. Because remember, everyone's always acting in their own best interest. It's so hard to tell when you have so many people vested in the outcome that they're looking for, because you have so many differing priorities as well, as opposed to just the one, financy, solve the case. And yet you have all these other people's careers, priorities, promotions, not getting unelected into sheriff positions. I mean, there's so much noise. It's so hard to filter it down into what the motivations for the behaviors are. It can be overwhelming.
But my point, Robin, is, and Tony, is if you have this name, if you have this person, right? If we're at it's either A or B, Occam's razor, and you have that, I think you would see the same dynamic approach if you believe you know who did it. I mean, my gosh, he could be alive. I mean, nobody can say emphatically she's dead. No one can say. So you would do that, because also, you've got some guy that could do this again, whether they do a wrench attack, whether the people say, hey, you did a pretty good job. Nobody's found you in 4 months. Why don't we give it another whirl over here?
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, I mean, it seemed like forever, even though it wasn't forever. The person that they actually were zeroing in on, and everyone was giving them a lot of grief because they didn't think they were, was Koberger. And, you know, they had a really good idea it was him. They'd start tracing him. And so, what do you think? So let's take glass half full. They know who this person is. What's the delay in having more leakage on movement from us not seeing much?
Well, that's the thing. And everybody's, no matter what network, whether you go to News Nation network or you go to ABC, NBC, everybody tracking this, they're all saying that their sources say there's nothing. Nobody has anything. Nobody knows anything. And so if we're to believe that, and then that's why there's no leakage. There's nothing to leak.
Yeah.
But then they don't have a name.
That's why mainstream media.
Or it hasn't leaked.
I don't think they know.
I think we need to get a Ouija board and summon the ghost of Ray Combs to bring us back and answer the question. We'll do a ghostly family feud. What's going on? Why wasn't this working? And I think we might get some answers. I don't know. I feel like there's certainly wonderful, very dedicated, well-meaning, hardworking, intelligent people on this case. But I feel like at the end of the day, the answer to why we're not anywhere with this is probably ego and incompetence. For the survey... ding. I think that's where it might be. I don't know. Time will tell. Time will certainly tell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Let's go to one more case this morning. 18-year-old Anna Kempner was found dead aboard the Carnival Horizon, hidden under a bed in a stateroom she shared with her 16-year-old stepbrother, who's now charged as an adult with first-degree murder. The parents were sleeping across the hall, three teenagers who weren't raised together in a single room, and no adult checked in for hours. The question that has consumed the case since November should the parents face charges? Are they going to face charges? It's getting louder by the day. But between that demand and the federal courtroom, there may be a jurisdictional wall that makes that nearly impossible. Hudson's step-grandmother went on CBS and said the parents should be charged, called the whole Cruz thing a recipe for disaster. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, and Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, also with us to break this down. It is a recipe for disaster. There was a lot of warning signs ahead of time, allegedly, from friends, from other family members, that she was not feeling very safe around this young man. Another family says, oh, well, she could have went and slept with grandma and grandpa, and she chose not to, throwing it back onto the victim. I don't know. I've been looking at this thing. You guys have been looking at this thing for a very long time. Emotion certainly takes over a lot. And you look at these parenting decisions and you go, what the hell? Just like with the crash in Mackenzie Schirilla. But is there any legal levers to pull? Have any laws truly been broken? Is there any criminal behavior other than just, you know, not the greatest parenting at the end of the day? Jennifer, let's go to you. Do you think there's any route or any road where we're going to see charges come against any of the parents here in this situation?
Well, this is the deal, and you hit on it at the end. I remember sitting in the chair across from Dick Ludwig, my boss, a Hooverite guy, and the number one thing he wanted to know when I was going to open a case is, you got to give me the violations. What do you see happening? What are you going to have to prove? Step by step, get out the CFRs and let's go through it right now as a baby agent. And that's the thing. When you're sitting here, I'm in the chair and I'm trying to answer that question to Ludwig, I can't answer it because there aren't CFRs. Remember, this is a federal case. It happened aboard a cruise ship. There is no CFR that supports that any charges, because the parents being bad parents, being stupid, having this adolescence together, male and female, with all of that going on, it's horrible parenting. It's sick. It's immoral. But I can't find a law to support an arrest.
Let me, and I want to ask one more follow-up on that quick. If this happened at the La Quinta in Orlando, would that be a different scenario because it all would have happened on U.S. soil? Or does something with it being in international waters on a cruise ship change that equation? Or is it the same either way?
Well, you have a lot more statutes with the locals, lot more statutes. And what did the parents do in that case? Did they drive the child, or you're just saying they're all in a hotel room and then they go out to the bar and meet the two kids in the hotel room and something like this happens? I still say, I don't know a statute that fits, even a local statute for being a stupid parent.
So I don't know these statutes that well either, Jen, but say that during the investigation, the prosecution uncovers a lot of text messaging and other evidence that says that the daughter was informing the parents that, hey, this is a problem, this is an issue, or not just the parents or other people are letting the parents know that this is an issue, and you can prove that they're aware that she was intimidated by the stepbrother, didn't feel safe around the stepbrother. Does that change the dynamic at all?
I still don't think it meets the law. I still can't even think of a charge. It's not aiding and abetting. It's not harboring.
What would be required for aiding and abetting?
Well, that would mean that you purposefully commit, I believe, two overt acts in to make the particular crime take place. Right. And purposefully, that's the other problem. You can't just do it on accident. You have to be purposeful in your action. I just don't see it, because I don't see that they could envision this murder.
The case that a lot of people are throwing it as a comparison to, and it doesn't match up very well, but it's nonetheless being thrown out, the Crumbleys. I mean, in that case, they bought their son a gun, and then horrible things happened, and there was warning signs. In this case, the kid is pretty much the gun, if you will. There's been warning signs, allegedly, from a lot of people. I mean, we're hearing more and more people coming out of the woodwork, from the ex-boyfriend to friends to all. I mean, you're hearing new accounts of the length sometimes that Anna allegedly went to not be in the same house as this stepbrother. And at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of people grew up in, and not saying this is okay, but a lot of people grow up in circumstances like this, especially when they reach their teen years, where they don't want to have anything to do with what's going on in the house, not just because they're petulant teens, but because the parenting is toxic, because either the parents are shitty, or there's a step-sibling or a sibling that's shitty, and they're enduring things that they shouldn't have to endure, which would amount to abuse in a certain way, but never getting, you know, there's no legal route that's being taken, because it's all happening within the family dynamic. With all that being said, all these lists of things, it comes down to, it feels just rather incompetent parenting. Do we need more? Do we need stupid parent statutes? on the books, where it really does something here.
And real quickly, I'm sorry, before you answer, Jen, I did look it up. The only statutes that I'm finding that would potentially apply, and that's why I think we're hearing a little bit of news, is accessory after the fact, misprision of felony, and conspiracy. So all these are after the fact that the parents took an action after the knowledge that he killed the daughter is what the federally is what could be charged.
Or if they conspired with him to murder her, right?
But right, that's conspiracy, right? That's an agreement between hand,
which
beforehand.
I'm sure is not the equation here, right. But yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. You know, the federal statutes are so much more limited. In the state statutes, you could have things like neglect, abuse, possibly. But I just don't think that's going to happen here, because I just don't think they have it. It literally would have to be a text message that's received where she says, "I'm in fear for my life. Please don't let me." And they say, "No, sorry, you're staying in there. I don't care what he," you know, and we don't know. We don't have any proof of that.
Right. I'm going to look up that one right now. I do think, though, because like you're saying, Jen, federally, we typically don't do these types of cases. That's why we don't have statutes for them. That's why we have partnerships with our locals and state.
Well, I mean, and are we talking about if there were to be any sort of charges here? And I mean, would it be something like, we saw a comment there, what about neglect? Sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But again, it's not a murder charge. It'd be a slap on the wrist. And at this point, do authorities look at this and go, "You're suffering enough. You lost your daughter." Granted, there is a faction of the society that looks at this and wants blood and wants you to be held accountable, because this was totally preventable. But at the end of the day, preventable if you had been a little more intelligent. And there's not a law. There's nothing that we can do to inspire parents or give them the ability to think, or human beings to think two or three steps ahead. Thank goodness there's folks that do, but there's plenty that don't. And there's no laws prohibiting people that don't from reproducing and having children.
It's all state level stuff for any of those. If it ever uncovered, I'm sorry to cut you off, Jen. If there's ever uncovered, it was ever uncovered that she texted her parents that she felt a threat from it, it goes to state level criminal charges, not federal.
It's just sadly not there. And I think the three of us would love them to be charged with something. We don't get it, because we get it. But the law is very finite. Especially the federal law in a case like this. And the Quimbleys, definitely they had it. That was a whole set of circumstances.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotion in this case, because I think a lot of us can relate to it being parents and going, just the various experiences of life or seeing other people's kids or other bad parenting. And you're just like, oh my gosh, this is insane. And these folks just, they walk amongst us. There's always going to be bad parenting out there, and you want to hold people accountable, but the law is the law. And emotion is not the law. I would venture to say they are probably suffering enough, obviously going through this hell of their daughter, of him losing his daughter, and it being this family dynamic the way it happened. But yeah, shoulda, coulda, woulda, hindsight is 20/20 in a lot of cases like this. And I don't know that there's always, locking somebody up or giving them some sort of stiff legal penalty is going to do anything other than make some of us go, yeah, that feels good. They got,
they're not going to, it's 100% federal. Yeah. There's slim to no chance unless it's conspiracy after the fact.
Yeah. All right. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. The links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to this or watching us, so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we follow for you right here. All right. Check this out. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books and audiobooks. Check it out. Jennifer Coffendaffer, Break the Case, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts, search it, press subscribe, and binge away. Until next time, for Robin, for Jen, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like your true crime like you like your coffee,
Red Handed is the podcast for you.
It's dark, intense, and might just keep you up all night.
I'm Hannah.
I'm Saruti. And every week on Red Handed, we break down a different fascinating case.
From the most recent US trials everyone is obsessing over, like Brendan Banfield, Karen Reed, and Ellen Greenberg,
to the most unbelievable stories from around the world, there's nothing we love more than digging into every detail of the cases we cover, getting beyond a basic analysis and cutting to the heart of the story.
Red Handed has over 400 episodes ready to binge right now.
Plus, be sure to check out our weekly sister show, Shorthand, where we unpack everything from the Black Death to Area 51.
If you're looking for smart, detailed true crime with personality, check out Red Handed wherever you get your podcasts.